Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to a Cinematic Universe minisode. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and joining me to bridge the gap between our Black Panther and Superman 3 episodes is...
Seb Patrick.
So Seb, it's just me and you this week, but
it
hey...
It is. James has been barred from the podcast after the angry pitchfork mob that we got after your criticism of Bucky in the Black Panther episode.
I maintain that that criticism was legitimate and deserved.
I can only speak for every single woman I know who likes the MCU, and I don't even just mean on the internet. I mean, like, my mum and my wife, who all go, "Oh, yay, Bucky," whenever Bucky turns up. So you've got them to answer to.
Listen,
and me.
Very attractive man. I appreciate that he means a lot to Steve Rogers. His dour face means absolutely nothing to me. And get a haircut, you hippie.
Well, he's been asleep in a tent for 6 months, hasn't
he?
So.
He's been asleep in his last three performances, Seb. Okay, so should we dive straight into the news?
Yes.
Right, let's start off with Black Panther, because the Black Panther box office, we kind of referred to this when we were recording the episode.
Who mama is the phrase to describe the Black Panther box office.
Yeah, so this is insane. It has, throughout its first 10 days, crossed $400 million in the North American box office. That includes a $108 million second weekend, which is the second biggest ever second weekend, only trailing The Force Awakens. The Force Awakens, obviously, being the highest grossing movie ever at the North American box office. To add to that $400 million, it has another $300 million internationally. It hasn't opened in China yet. This is a monster, and that is more, you know, after 10 days, that is more than any other Marvel movie. It is past the Avengers. Now, I think the question will be, in terms of, like, the ceiling for this movie, can it outgross the Avengers? And then will it end up being the highest grossing movie of 2018 for Marvel?
I posited this question on Twitter earlier after seeing the stat that now, this was a tweet from about 5 hours ago as we record this on Sunday night, that said that it had passed Guardians 2. It was only about 8 million short of, this is domestic, 8 million short of Civil War, 9 million short of Iron Man 3. So, you know, it's almost certainly going to be at least the third highest. It will almost certainly top Age of Ultron as well. So I posited the question of, you know, could it be the case that this ends up actually making more than Infinity War? Or will it be the case that Infinity War will just make even more than it was going to before? And several people replied saying they think it's the latter. I agree. I'm not sure this is going to necessarily crack the billion. Because I think it is one where the gross, I mean, it's done really well over here, but I do think the gross is skewed a bit more towards that domestic US market.
That was also the case with The Force Awakens, though, and Star Wars is a franchise that, you know, is, well, you'd think until Black Panther turned up, like, pretty untoppable outside of the North American box office, but it made more than $1 billion.
But Star Wars does have that kind of what if. I think the thing with Black Panther, this is, I'm aware that we're going to start repeating things that I know you guys talked about on the main episode anyway, but what's particularly striking with this and what's particularly relevant to why it's making so much is people going back and seeing it again and again and again. And the film is so heavily rooted around, as well as, you know, kind of experience of African culture and people, it's very rooted in African American. And so, you know, it does have that quite US-centric slant to how it looks at things outside of Wakanda. And, you know, so that is why I think it's resonating even more there. And so I think that, you know, that worldwide is still going to be strong, but is it going to have the people are just going to go and keep on seeing it the way that I think they will continue to in America?
Well, if it makes the money that Avengers did in North America, which at the moment it's outpacing, it will make, let's say, 600 to 650 mil in North America. It's already at 300 worldwide, so I think...
So it could, it could well crack the billion.
I think we're talking...
I wouldn't be surprised if it did, but...
I think we're talking about 1.2, 1.3 is my
guess.
But
I think Infinity War is going to top that. And the reason War is going to top that is because of Black Panther. You know, we already knew that Infinity War... Before we even saw a trailer for Infinity War, it was like, well, that's easily going to make a billion. After we saw the trailer, it was like, okay, this could be the highest grossing thing ever. And that was before you brought in this additional audience, because genuinely there are so many people who've gone to see Black Panther as their first MCU film, and that is the first time that will have happened in such large numbers pretty much since the franchise kicked off, since the first Avengers film, essentially, because the first Avengers film did bring in a lot of people who hadn't watched the ones leading up to it.
Here's the flip. So I think it's the first one since the Avengers. And you look what happened with the Avengers box office, which the Avengers made 1.5 billion worldwide, and then its biggest solo star, Iron Man 3, then made 1.2 billion just afterwards.
Had that knock-on effect from Avengers, of people who went to see Avengers going to see Iron Man.
And that was something, I think that was something like double what Iron Man 2 made. So, you know, it did make a big bump. And yeah, I think, you know, when you rewatch those trailers, you see Wakanda, you see Black Panther.
It is to everything. Yeah.
You see, I mean, because now when he walks out and says, "Someone get this man a shield," you're like, "Oh, but I know that guy." And like, there's the shot where you see Mbaku in the background and you're like, "Oh, that guy's back." I think that's going to have a knock-on effect.
It already kind of was for me, because you know my feelings about Steve Rogers, but it makes that shot in the trailer of all those characters running towards the camera the best shot of the trailer, because all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, it's Captain America and the Hulk and Black Widow and Bucky, for those who like him. And all of these guys you absolutely loved who were amazing in Black Panther. So it's, you know, all of a sudden that has become like possibly the most interesting corner of the MCU immediately.
Yeah.
And that's phenomenal. And, you know, I haven't really, people who follow me on Twitter will see, you know, because I wasn't on the episode, I haven't talked about my opinions of the film. I don't think it's a perfect film. I don't know exactly where it sits in my ranking. I think it's just outside the top five. It's maybe kind of hovering around sixth or seventh. But the thing more than anything else that I loved about it was those supporting characters and that world. And, you know, like everyone, I just want to see more of that immediately. And that is going to have that boost to Infinity War. I think we are looking at Infinity War. Could it head towards 2 even? I mean, is that a ridiculous prediction to make?
I think it is going to make silly money. I said this on a few podcasts ago, didn't I? I think that Infinity War ends up being the highest grossing Marvel movie, at least up to the end of phase three, because who knows what comes after that. But I just feel like there will be some drop off for whatever Infinity War Part 2 ends up being. And this coming off the back of Black Panther, having that bump, because you've got to think, you're an audience member who's just gone to see Black Panther, and you're like, maybe you've never seen a Marvel movie before, but you're like, this guy's awesome, this world is awesome, these characters are great. And just as it's leaving theatres, what's showing up? Oh, hey, it's a new movie with Black Panther in it.
Yeah, Black Panther and several of the other characters in it as well.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm I'm predicting, I don't know, let's say 1.8 worldwide for Infinity War. That's what I'm going for right now.
Not an unreasonable expectation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not off the top of my head au fait with what the current number one is. Where, like, how much did Avatar make overall? I assume Avatar is still the number one.
I think Avatar made like 3.4.
Oh, right, okay.
Worldwide. Yeah,
Force Awakens didn't top Avatar. Nothing will ever top Avatar, will it? Because of that.
Well, until James Cameron makes another movie. Avatar made 2.7 worldwide, and right. I think maybe Titanic was 1.8 before that. So yeah, I don't think.
But we could be looking at a solid third place ahead of Star Wars.
I think
1.8. No, Star Wars did make 2. Okay.
Yeah, so I think
could nestle in behind Force Awakens.
Yeah, possibly. I'm looking forward quite a lot to that movie.
I think we've said it after the trailer, but it's like, I mean, God, just imagine if it somehow turned out not to be. I mean, it won't. It can't. It's just ridiculous. But it's just. You know, the excitement level that we had for the first Avengers film feels like nothing compared to this. It's ridiculous. I don't think we're going to be in any way prepared for it.
I think towards the back end of last year, I was just like, I can't be excited for Infinity War because, of course, it's going to be bad. And then we saw the footage, and then we saw Black Panther, and I'm like, yes, I'm hyped. It's going to be amazing. So that was the Black Panther box office, and we'll move on now over to DC, where, as usual, you just want something positive to come out at this point, don't you? Like, just some, like...
I love that the Black Panther thing is going on just as Justice League... starts to... Has it had a home release in the US, maybe? Because I've seen people talking about it all of a sudden. People have been watching it. Or has it had its home release here now?
I don't know, Seb. I don't care unless they release the Snyder Cut.
It started to have home releases. And so all of a sudden, everyone's talking about the moustache again. To the exclusion of anything else about Justice League.
Well, and I think how we'll now tie this into the latest piece of news from the DC Universe. From a PR point of view, I'm not sure anyone has ever made a more catastrophic career decision than Joss Whedon agreeing to step in and direct Justice League. Because, I mean, like, it was obviously a thankless task that he was... Whatever he did to that movie, it was going to end up as some weird Frankenstein or not have any of his imprint on it whatsoever. The DC fans hated it. Like, you know, you got your early defenders going, oh, no, you're just criticising DC movies again. But pretty soon that kind of morphed into a, no, it is bad because Joss Whedon took Zack's vision and perverted it. So now Joss Whedon seems to have this really weird... toxic relationship with the toxic fanboys online. But there's also this, I think, as well, this uncomfortableness with Marvel. Like, it felt really weird seeing him in that 10 years photo of the MCU.
You kind of forgot that he's part of that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, and then in the background was still this that, you know, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. Oh, so apparently, do you remember that Joss Whedon's still attached to a Batgirl movie? But now he's not.
No.
What did you think of his statement, Seb? Did you read it?
I don't think I read the statement, actually, no, because I think while the news broke was when I was watching Black Panther, and so I was messaging James about Black Panther, and he said something like, oh, lol, at the Joss Whedon news, and I was like, oh, God, what? So that was where I heard
well,
about
let
it.
Well,
so
let me deliver the statement to you. Batgirl is such an exciting project and Warner's DC such collaborative and supportive partners that it took me months to realise I didn't have a story. I'm grateful to Jeff and Toby and everyone who was so welcome when I arrived and so understanding when I, is there a sexier word for failed? So, Yeah, and I've seen Whedon getting absolutely hammered for this online, and I think obviously his feminist credentials have taken a bit of a hit over the past year as well. And I saw a lot of, you know, comic book writers as well who, you know, had worked on Batgirl titles in the past saying, hey, guess, do you know who's got stories? We've got stories.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, there is a slight perversion of Whedon's words there, which is, I think, him basically saying, look, I really wanted to make a Batgirl movie happen. I went and started working on the script, and after trying to work in it, I realised I wasn't the guy to do it. But, I mean, like, talk about a guy digging his own grave with that statement. Didn't it's have weird, a story.
Why would he come out and admit that? Because, yeah, it just makes...
And why would DC sign off on that statement, which is then basically saying, yeah, we essentially greenlit a project based on Joss Whedon saying, I want to do Batgirl.
And not, here's my idea for how to do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, if that's the case, if you're talking about, like, a commitment to this DCEU, I mean, Joss Whedon coming in and saying, I want to do Batgirl, and then not saying, well, let's figure out how that can fit in the DCEU first. They're going, no, yeah, that's fine. We'll announce that.
Yeah, it's just...
Anyway, we've got my man, Aquaman, coming up later in 2018, and then I think...
You almost wonder if, like, they might just sit on that and not actually release it.
Just do a new Mutants.
Well, just because, where does that sit now? Because they have no plan for anything else. There is no roadmap here at all. And even if there was one, what happened with Justice League is going to have to cause them to... really reconsider.
I've given up trying to figure it out. I don't think we can figure it out until we know what's happening with the Batman movie, because I think that's kind of like the pivotal one there, because if Affleck comes back, I think you trudge miserably through this extended universe until it literally becomes financially unviable. But if not, there's maybe a fresh start and some creative impetus to do something different. But, you know, we know we've got Aquaman, Seb. We know we've got Shazam, which has been confirmed as being in the DCEU. And I think at this point, although it's had one of the most tortured processes, DC seemed very keen to get that Flash movie made. They're certainly not cutting ties with this whole extended universe idea, but I think it might be, you know, how do we mangle it into something that looks slightly different?
The thing I think with Batgirl as well is that, I mean, you know, it seems like the reason they decided to make this was Joss Whedon coming to them and saying that he wanted to do it. I don't know if they're going to proceed with it as a project now, because I've seen a lot of people online going, oh, you should do this with it, you should get this person in, you should get this person in.
No.
I'm not really sure of the point. I like Barbara Gordon, and I like Batgirl as a character, and Batgirl Year One, her origin comic from a few years ago, is, you know, one of my favourite DC comics of relatively recent years, but as a derivative character, is she really where you want to go in terms of doing another solo heroine film? Or, and I'm wary as well of making this a kind of either or thing. I saw the thing of people saying after Black Panther, oh, you know, sod doing a Black Widow movie, let's do movies with all of these great female characters from Black Panther. And it's like, no, it's not an either or. Do all of them.
Yeah.
And I'd say the same with DC's heroines. You know, I'm not saying that if they want to do a different one, it should be at the exclusion of Batgirl. I just think you're always slightly on the back foot with a character who's a derivative of an existing male name, and DC have got plenty of female characters who aren't that. So, you know, pick up one of those and do something interesting with them.
Yeah, I think if you want to carry on with a Batgirl, you know, decide whether you're doing these solo movies outside of the DCEU.
Work out what the hell you're doing with your Batman setup as well.
Yeah, because I don't see currently how a Batgirl fits into our status quo with Batman in a way that does anything other than distract anyway.
No, I mean you've got a Commissioner Gordon there, so you could strike her out as a relatively, you could get Barbara Gordon as a relatively independent character. But
Anyway, so that was DC on the big screen. We'll flip to DC on the small screen, and a show that Seb and I vowed to probably never watch was Krypton. But Krypton got its first trailer this week. Seb, you didn't watch the trailer, but I did, and I'm going to now
know it existed.
ask you about it. So this was one of the I kind of read what the concept of the show was about and went, huh, okay, that sounds comic book nerdy and interesting in a way that I didn't expect this show to be interesting. And then watched the trailer, and it was the same kind of like sub CW acting that kind of made me go, oh, no, I don't think I'm going to watch this. But the villain is Brainiac. And the villain is going to be Brainiac from Word Go. And it looks like the plot is that Brainiac has travelled back in time to try and destroy Krypton before Superman is born. But Adam Strange has also time travelled back to work with Clark Kent's grandfather to stop Brainiac. So
that Seb, almost sounds fun.
It does almost sound fun, doesn't it? And like the
although I would have made it Booster Gold, not Adam Strange.
Well, so here's my first especially question.
Especially seeing as literally current/recent issues of Action Comics have got a storyline with Booster Gold and Superman on Krypton.
Well, who is Adam Strange? That's...
Oh, this is we're explaining concepts that you don't understand.
Yes, exactly.
So Adam Strange is a guy, he's the most like stereotypical 1950s retro futurist spaceman.
He sounds possibly great.
Yeah. If you've never seen a picture of him, Google Adam Strange and look at his costume. So, and the premise of Adam Strange is that basically he gets transported by way of a technology called a Zeta Beam to another planet called Ran. Ran is known for being part of the Ran-Thanagar War, Thanagar being the planet that Hawkman comes from. And basically, Adam Strange is separated from Earth by this Zeta Beam, and like his wife, Alana, is stuck on Earth. While he's on Ran, he becomes a hero. He basically... I've got it wrong. No, sorry, Alana is from Ran. He comes to Ran, he becomes a hero on that planet, falls in love with Alana. But basically the way that a Zeta Beam works is that after it's transported you, it wears off and it zaps you back. So Adam Strange is in this constant state of like every 4 years bouncing back between Ran and Earth, and he can't do anything about it. And on Earth, he's not really a hero. Nobody knows who he is. Like, he kind of is a superhero, but he's relatively anonymous. And on Ran, he's their Superman, essentially. What this has to do with time travel, I'm not sure. I've never really thought of him as a time-travelling hero, hence why I would have said Booster Gold would be the character for this.
Maybe he doesn't time travel. Maybe he's just aware of Brainiac's time travel. But, yeah. So, I mean, like I say, it sounds more interesting than I thought it would be. Earthly time traveller Adam Strange changes his life in the course of history. That's in the show description.
If you said to me, DC Comics, Time Traveller, the places you would go are Rip Hunter and Booster Gold. Now, obviously, Rip Hunter is in use, so they wouldn't use him. But I don't know why you wouldn't have it be Booster.
Technically, there's still that Blue Beetle Booster Gold movie in development,
possibly,
I guess.
Maybe that's it.
Maybe.
I'm sure there'd still be other time travellers you could use.
Seb, my big worry for DC, and I think it's great sometimes that you're watching these DC shows and you see all of these characters thrown in there in Legends of Tomorrow. And, you know, I watched the Crisis on Earth X crossover that the CW did recently. And, you know, they're just throwing IP at the screen in a really fun way. But I do worry that, like, you know, would Marvel have been able to create some of the hype it has for some of its more recent films if, you know, I don't know, like, if Star-Lord had shown up on a crappy ABC show in the mid-2000s, or if there'd been Black Panther characters popping up. And, you know, just done, you know, say there'd been a kind of camp naff version of Killmonger on a TV show 10 years ago. I do worry that they're kind of diminishing their IP a bit.
I agree with you, but they already did this. It was called Smallville.
Yeah.
So and I've already done it once, and it didn't harm the success of Arrow to have had a shitty Green Arrow on Smallville, did it?
No, but I wonder whether it harmed the chances of having like an Arrow movie at any point.
Maybe
because yeah. because I think that there is a point at which you look at some of these characters showing up and going, well, yeah, they're C&D list, and then you look at what Marvel are doing, going, well, they're making their C&D list roster really pop on the big screen when they turn up. So I don't, and when you're talk, when you t- I don't know, I hear a character like Adam Strange and I go, like, who knows, maybe you did want to save him to do something with, because if you do something successful on the big screen, then he's someone you want to use. And then do you want Brainiac to be someone that, if you, I don't think it matters if you do it well, because I think if Reverse Flash gets used in a Flash movie, it will be fine.
Also, Brainiac, you can play with different versions of Brainiac anyway, so
fair enough. Okay, but yeah, I don't know,
alien android computery, there's lots of different interpretations, and you could just quite as easily say they're all different actual versions of him. So
it's just funny that sometimes DC have been protective, like them kind of ripping Harley Quinn out of Arrow just as she was about to be used. But a lot of the time they're happy for anyone and everyone to be featured. Anyway, let's move on to a TV show that we are very much looking forward to. This is The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. So we were very excited when they cast Kiernan Shipka in the titular role. They've started filling out the cast, Seb. Shall we start with Aunt Hilda and Aunt Zelda? Because yeah. I saw both of these pieces of casting and went, yes, 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 yes.
I mean, I am disappointed that neither of them are Melissa Joan Hart.
Well, I'm not, because I think that she will be fine turning up in, like, a guest role towards the end of the first season. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. Lucy Davis as Hilda, most recently seen in Wonder Woman, of course. And I was kind of like, oh, I really like that. But then the second piece of casting, Miranda Otto as Zelda. And I saw that and went, oh, good gravy, that's good. Miranda Otto, an actress who has been criminally underused by Hollywood since she was absolutely fantastic in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I think she turned up in the 24 reboot the other year. But yeah, Aunt Zelda, I just suddenly went, oh, yes, that seems to fit. And I'm so delighted that she has gone from killing the Witch King of Angmar in the Lord of the Rings to actually being a witch in her own right. That's so great. Are you more excited for either of those in particular?
Yeah, no, I don't know Miranda Otto that well, kind of outside the context of Lord of the Rings. But yeah, I can see why that works as Zelda, especially as a contrast to Lucy Davis being Hilda, which you can already see the dynamic there, can't you? And you can see exactly how Lucy Davis will play that character.
I mean, Seb, obviously I don't know the Roberto Aguirre Sacasa comic. But what I do know is the Sabrina that I watched as a kid on TV. Yeah. And this reminds me of that. This reminds me of I could imagine both of those these actresses playing a twist on those characters.
In the TV show, yeah, you've got the kind of the fun one and the stern one. And I think where I see Lucy Davis is fun one, but also the kind of ditzy one. I hate the word ditzy, and I hate what it implies, but you know what I mean. I mean, you can pretty much transpose how she played Etta in Wonder Woman onto the well-meaning, but, you know, and yeah, sort of, you know, give her magical powers that she might misuse slightly. You know,
I'm thinking along the lines of Sarah Jessica Parker in Hocus Pocus, which is just another set of witches that I can remember.
Yeah. I've got to say, I mean, as good as I think the Lucy Davis casting in particular is, it's not the one that really made me go, oh, wow, okay.
I'm going to guess, based on your other interests, Seb, that Michelle Gomez being cast in the show was the one that moved the needle for you. So I mean, I didn't see a huge amount of her in Doctor Who. Like, I think I saw Capaldi's first season series. I don't know how you like to refer to them. I thought
it's series because seasons is the old show, so it's a handy way of differentiating. When you say season 10, you mean one from 1973 rather than
sure. That's what I meant. So I saw her in the first Capaldi series, and was like, yeah, fine. But I know that she was very popular amongst fans of the show.
Yes. The thing about Michelle Gomez is she doesn't really... Well, maybe she does in other things, but certainly in Doctor Who, she doesn't really act. Because the thing about Michelle Gomez is Michelle Gomez is fucking mental. And this made her absolutely perfect to play Missy, who was just deranged and hilarious, because Michelle Gomez is deranged and hilarious. And reading the description of the character that she's playing, so I've got it here. Gomez will play Mary Wardell, Sabrina's favourite teacher and mentor at Baxter High. When she is possessed by the devil's handmaiden, Madame Satan, Ms. Wardell turns into a sultry, cunning manipulator, always trying to lure Sabrina down the path of night. And that is just perfect. That is just absolutely perfect for Michelle Gomez. I'm already imagining just how much fun she's going to have with that.
And then
if you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pairing I'd be that amazed with, if she's not the best thing about the show.
Pairing that with other British actors in potentially villainous roles, Richard Coyle has been cast as Father Blackwood. Richard Coyle, I mean, I imagine for you as well, Seb, best known for coupling.
From a Stephen Moffat thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever got on with Richard Coyle as a drama actor. The thing about Richard Coyle was, he did coupling, in which he was absolutely brilliant, and he was, you know, it helped that the character was the funniest character in the show, but a lot of that was down to his performance. He was really, really funny in that
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
The stage seemed set for him to go on to be a really great and likable comedy actor.
And he had no interest in doing that whatsoever.
He pretty much distanced himself from coupling the moment it finished. And obviously he left a season early as well because he didn't want to do it anymore. So he's not in the last season.
He's on the Isle of Lesbos, as I remember.
Yeah. And ever since then, he's mostly done drama. And I don't think I've ever been that interested in anything I've seen him in. I just think he's just a quite bland and boring drama actor. So he's fine. I don't dislike him, but I don't, as I say, he's never jumped out for me in anything other than coupling, in which I think he was absolutely brilliant. So is this going to steer him more towards something a bit more lighthearted? I don't know, because this is going to be I mean, I think this is going to be a horror comedy, but it is. I think there's going to be a lot of emphasis on the horror side of it. So
I was thinking the thing that I've liked him the most in since Coupling was Grabbers, which was leaning heavily on the heavily on the comedy. I mean, I think he's fine doing the kind of the kind of darker, more miserable stuff. I think he's quite good in the Pusher remake, which is fine. Yeah, but I can kind of see him as this like dark, twisted priest. I'm on board for that. The other casting that we know from the show, Chance Perdomo, has been cast as Ambrose Spellman. So clearly some relation. And then Rosalind Walker is being played by Jazz Sinclair. Two actors I'm unfamiliar with, but it looks like from looking at Jazz Sinclair's IMDb, she's been in stuff like The Vampire Diaries, and she was in Paper Towns, and she's going to be in the Slender Man movie that's coming out soon.
I was a bit worried because it said that Ambrose, Chance Perdomo's character, was Sabrina's warlock cousin from England, and I thought, oh god, but he is actually British, the actor, so we're not going to have American doing British accent syndrome. We're going to have British person appears in American show and their accent goes kind of weird as a result syndrome. Yeah.
Also, I mean, his top credit on IMDb is Midsummer Murders, which is fantastic. But also, you know, another actor in the long tradition of black British actor having to go to Hollywood to find work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. A slight side point. Lily Reinhart has said that, as far as she knows, that it is in a different universe to Riverdale for now, and that she doesn't foresee Betty popping up on that show. To that, I would say, let's wait and see. But also, I'm with you, Seb, with what you when you reference the comics being set in the 60s. Is it?
Yeah,
that feels like a thing that could be happening here.
Maybe. Yeah,
and that gives you a way to kind of be separate from Riverdale. But if you need to do crossovers, given there's magic, those characters at the same age can interact, and also you can have kind of like older versions of the characters popping up.
Yeah,
because what would Sabrina be in, like, her 60s?
Oh, I didn't even want to try and do the maths.
Yeah. Anyway,
sounds about right. Yeah.
So speaking of another TV show which is currently beefing out its cast, The Umbrella Academy, the Netflix TV show, which will be well known to listeners of this podcast as it was recommended on a podcast about 3 years ago, I think.
It was definitely one of the early ones, yeah.
It was pretty early on in the show's run, so far back that I can like vaguely remember what happened in it, but also can't. I know it was the Gerard Way comic that Netflix obviously decided to take a punt on, and the cast is taking shape. We haven't talked about this on the podcast up to now, but it has a huge cast at this point. The big one, Seb, is that Ellen Page is playing Vanya. Who is it fair to say that she's the lead? I'm struggling to kind of
it's really hard to talk about without spoilering the first book, which I presume will be the first season.
Yeah,
let's go with kind of.
Yeah, she plays a significant role.
Yeah, and I have a feeling if they've cast someone like Ellen Page, that they might be slightly changing how it goes anyway, and make her more of an out-and-out lead. Because you don't, you know, unless you're X-Men in the year 2006, you don't cast Ellen Page in something to not be the star, really, do you?
Yeah, especially on the small screen. Yeah. So I'll run through some of the other... I'm just going to compare the Wikipedia page in terms of, like, importance of characters to
to
who's been cast.
That's next to me on the shelf here.
So the Monocle, also known as Sir Reginald Hargreaves,
so he's the eccentric billionaire who brings them all together.
Yeah. Yep, it's been played by Colm Feore, who, as we've discussed in the past, absolutely fantastic in the first Thor movie as Laufey, So I'm happy about that. He's generally a guy that shows up in stuff, and when he does, he's good in them. Who have we got next? We've got Space Boy, Lufa Hargreaves. Now, Lufa is going to be played by Tom Hopper. we've got the Kraken, Diego, who's been played by an actor called David Castaneda. The Rumour, who is Alison Hargreaves, that is Emmy Raver Lampman. The Seance, who's Klaus Hargreaves, he's been played by Robert Sheehan. So, relevant to the interest of this podcast, Robert Sheehan obviously broke out on Misfits, which I'm sure we'll get to on this podcast at some point one day. And anytime he's in something, I'm interested. Number five is being played by Aidan Gallagher. The Horror is... I can't see him on the IMDb, so I'll skip past him.
That's probably because I think The Horror is the character who's already dead when the series starts.
Yes, so we've got...
never actually appeared in it except in flashbacks.
So we just got a young version of him, and then Vanya, which is Ellen Page. Also in the cast, Adam Godley, who is an actor, who is one of those actors who you'll know him when you see his face. He's playing Pogo. And also Mary J. Blige has signed up to be part of the show, coming hot off the back of an Oscar nomination. It's a Netflix show that's attracting a cast of, I would say, probably like emerging stars and
seasoned actors. Even more so now that you rattled through all of those and I didn't recognise any of their names, it's clear that what they'll do with Vanya is really center the show around her, because Ellen Page is so much more famous than anyone else who's in the show.
Yeah, Sheehan's the other one who is, I think, has any kind of bigger profile. And then aside from that, it's kind of like character actors in the adult roles mostly. But yeah, it's a show that's happening, and it's hard not to be intrigued by, because the comic's really good.
The comic's really good. It is one of those, though, that it's so big. It's it helps that it's got someone like Gabriel Barr drawing it, and it's very centred around kind of big, ridiculous ideas. And The Umbrella Academy is the kind of comic that will throw away, in a one-page gag, a ridiculous, massive, over-the-top conceit that could be an entire series. And doing that on a Netflix budget is not really going to happen.
I mean, a Netflix budget is significantly bigger than the budget you're going to get on just about anywhere else other than maybe HBO. Like, on TV, it's significant.
You can do it,
and Netflix aren't afraid to lose money. So, yeah.
I mean, at least it is a Netflix TV show and not a Netflix movie, because if it was a Netflix movie, we'd already know that it was going to suck. So, because that's a kiss of death at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, well, 80 original. Although that Annihilation has fantastic reviews, and that's being released straight to Netflix in this country, so...
Yeah, but it's not... it's not a Bright or a Mute in that it's Netflix's own thing.
I haven't seen Mute yet. I don't want to pass judgment because I'm very attached to Duncan Jones, and
I've seen a lot of retweets of praise of it, is all I'll say.
He is one of those on Twitter, unfortunately. James didn't like it. I know that.
James really didn't like it.
Yeah. So this is coming to Netflix. I'd imagine later this year or early next year at the latest. It kind of reminds me, I don't know, like, it seems to me like something that Tim Burton would have made if it had have got onto the big screen.
But yeah, very in his wheelhouse. Or even that Tim Burton would have stuck his name on Henry Selick making...
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one to keep an eye on. And I thought we should mention it because we hadn't already. And I seem to have shut down my scripts for the podcast. Why have I done that? Why have I done that, Seb? No, I haven't. I've just hidden it in a window. Actually, the last thing that we're going to talk about here isn't a piece of news. It is a show that debuted this weekend, or at least the second half of the show did. The Tick, Seb.
Yay.
We finally got to see the back half of season two. Now,
well, you've seen the back half. I haven't seen the last two episodes yet.
You've nearly seen it. I think I'd almost forgotten that this was coming, and I really only was made aware when I saw you tweeting about it earlier in the weekend, and I was like, oh, crap, is the Tick back? I'm going to have to find some time this weekend to watch that. But
you're a massive
that.
Fan of Griffin Newman, so don't you follow him on Twitter, and would you not have seen him talking about it for ages?
I do follow him on Twitter, and I'm a big fan, but I just, I don't know, it somehow passed me by. Mm. And, I mean, added to that, as I mentioned on Twitter today, Amazon's interface is such that both on Amazon Prime on my laptop and on the app on my PS4, when I logged in to Amazon Prime this weekend, the Tick did not show up on my homepage, despite the fact that I had watched all of the first six episodes of the show twice.
Well, here's the thing. So,
on the platform.
Well, on mine, on the Fire Stick, at the moment, it is the big banner thing that they're advertising at the very top when you when you're on the main home screen, which I quite enjoyed.
But get also, your shit together, Amazon. Like,
well, it's got a problem on, and I don't know if this is just on the Fire Stick or elsewhere. So on the Fire Stick, when you're on a listing for a show, if you scroll down, it will then have various rows the way that Netflix does. And usually one of the first things it will do is it will show other things that various actors from it star in. And they've messed up because it shows stuff that the cast of the 2000s Tick series have appeared in. And the description of the show is the description of the 2000s show. And it's like, if this wasn't Netflix, if this wasn't Amazon's own show, that would... it would still be a mistake, but it would be an understandable one. This is Amazon's own show. What if they're like, you know, it's not even an original, you know, it's an Amazon in this country that was on a network in the US. It is an Amazon show, 100%. And they've listed it wrongly as a different show on their own platform.
Presumably what's happened there is there is a glitch on that app, and it has taken the description from one show and popped it into another. Because I did see that they now have the original Tick sitcom available
they
to watch free on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, if anyone hasn't, go back and watch it. It's really entertaining, and it's so brief that you can kind of like whip through it. Most of the episodes are self-contained. It's a heap of fun. But it's not as good as the new Tick, which is really, really fantastic. And, I still think it was a mistake not to release this in one big batch last year. I decided to go back and watch the first six episodes again before I watch these new six to kind of refamiliarize myself.
You can see the split, I think. I think the first half of the season is about one thing, and the second half is about something else, at least.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I just think it was a weird gap. The fanfare for this return was not as big as, obviously, it didn't get on my radar, but I thought it should. It wasn't at the level that the fanfare was when the show first arrived. And I think while there is a defined split, I think I could have just gone from part one of the season to part two. I think the split is basically that part one of the season is a lot of world and character building and kind of setting a platform of a character accepting the call. And then the second half of the season, the character being, okay, I'm a superhero now. I might not really know how to do it yet, but I am a superhero now. And I think for me, the most impressive thing about the show is that while it is funny and it is poking fun at certain tropes or archetypes that you get in superhero movies and TV, that the world it builds itself is one that I take seriously and I'm invested in, and it feels like it has stakes. There is, you know, as we found it in the first half of the season, there is a giant naked man walking around the world. And while that is utterly ridiculous and is a hilarious visual, it feels like it has stakes for the world that I'm watching. And that's because I really care about the characters in it. And they all have a lot of depth. And I find myself buying into and getting excited about, like, the mythology of the show, and there's a reveal early on, you know, about the nature of a character in this and in the second
exactly
half of the show.
Which one you're talking about, and because I think that character, and I know we didn't want to get too much into specifics because we'll do an episode and we'll review it and we'll be spoilery, but there's a character who I liked in the first half, who I think has been the best thing about the second half. And I actually kind of think in some ways some of the other characters, and even to an extent Arthur and the Tick, have been a little underserved in the second half of the season. But it's been because of an increased focus on other characters. And this other character, who I assume is the same one you're talking about, I've really liked what they've done with him.
So I kind of watched the second half of the show in one extended batch earlier today as I was doing some work. So I do want to go back and rewatch it, because I also found that watching the first half of the show, I appreciated a lot more of that by watching it for a second time around. But I think that by the end of the show, I didn't feel like the Tick and Arthur had been underserved. Certainly not Arthur. I think the Tick works great as this secondary character, this foil.
I mean, there's a running joke from about halfway through the second half of the season that, again, I haven't seen the last two episodes, so I don't know if it carries into the last two, but it's been going for about two or three episodes at the point where I've been watching, and it is so funny. It's to do with where he thinks he's figured out his origin.
Yeah.
And like every moment that relates to that is, it's Sarah Finney, which is just so, so funny. It's brilliant.
Yeah, no, that does continue. And that's something that they always had fun with in the original Tick sitcom as well. Like,
oh, okay.
That the Tick has come from, well, who knows where, and what is his origin. And him kind of like flitting between having an interest in it and not. But I think Serafinowicz plays it as he did in aspects of the first half of the season, with kind of real humour and then like some great pathos as well. So yeah, I loved this back half of the show, and as I said, I'm just going to read verbatim a tweet that I sent out earlier, because I stand by it. There is a purity to the heroism on the Tick that makes my heart grow three sizes. And yeah. I think it is incredible that a show is able to have those moments, like at the end of the first half of the season, the bus scene, and I think the finale of this outdoes that.
Okay.
In that there
I'll
are just
forward to that then.
There were just
on my
I just
tomorrow.
I just think there are moments where you see characters displaying that heroism, and it feels like, you know, what pure superhero stories do at their best. And that's an even bigger achievement when you are kind of like ripping up the genre and having a little bit of fun with it at the same time.
Well, this all comes back to, I'm sure when we talked about season one, I will have compared it to the Giffen and DeMatteis Justice League. Because that really is what it feels the closest to, in that, yes, it's a comedy at heart, and yes, to an extent, it's skewering some of the cliches of the genre. But the reason why it works is that it lets you laugh at that stuff, but it is absolutely sincere in the story that it's telling and the heroism that's at the centre of it. And that's why the Giffen and DeMatteis Justice League is so good, and that's why the Tick is so good.
Yeah, I said to you before we started the podcast, I find the villains on this legitimately scary, because from word go on the show, the stakes were very clearly showed. You know, we had in the first episode of the show a flashback to the like Fantastic Four stand-ins on this show having their eyes eaten out by a syphilis virus, then shot and killed while a young boy watched. And to add to that, his dad had just been crushed to death. So, you know, those are the stakes on this show for the superheroes and for the regular people. I the terror and Miss Lynn, I found, and even some of the heroes, utterly terrifying. I'm looking forward to going back and rewatching this. I think it speaks volumes that in the era we're in, where there is so much superhero television, that I can find the time to watch this show twice.
Well, it helps that the episodes are only 20-odd minutes long.
But still, I mean, 12, 20-minute episodes, it still took like 4 hours out of my day today. And it was great. Okay, so that's it for this week's news. We're going to potentially talk some comics on a future podcast once we've eked out exactly what's going on over at Marvel. So we'll save Comics Corner for a future
week.
We'll
let Marvel figure out what they're doing.
Yeah,
first.
We'll let Marvel figure it out, and then we'll try and figure it out after that. So we'll move on to our final section, which is the pitch. Obviously, last week we had James and Amon on the podcast. Not Seb, but Seb, you have worked up. You've seen Black Panther, so you have worked up an answer for the pitch. I've got my own answer as well this week. So I thought what we'll do is we'll read out our two pitches now, and then what we'll probably do is we will get James to pick the winner on the next episode. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get in touch with Amon to get his pitch from him in time for this minisode. Maybe we'll be able to salvage it for a future episode, because I still do desperately want to hear it. But yeah, unfortunately, we don't have that to play here. But so it's going to be me versus Seb, and James will decide the winner at a later date. So Seb, do you want to go first, or shall I go first for our pitch this week?
I don't think you can go first. You're only really allowed to go after other people have gone.
Yeah, okay. You can lay the table. I should remind our listeners of what the pitch is. What would be your ideal Black Panther spin-off movie to be made alongside Black Panther 2 in Phase 4 of the MCU?
Well, I can't be alone in having seen the potential of the film having left Shuri in Los Angeles at the end.
Yeah.
So I would like to see a spin-off film that is focused on her kind of finding her way in America and, you know, kind of growing up as a teenager in America.
Is Nakia there with her?
I'm not sure.
I think it might be Shuri and Nakia who are left in Oakland. So
okay, well, so this show would be called Shuri Explains It All. Shuri would address the audience directly to describe the things that are happening in her life, dealing with typical adolescent concerns such as school, boys, and high tech weaponry. I almost think that she should actually take on a kind of secret civilian identity named after the actress who plays her, so that actually it could be called Letitia Explains It All, which would rhyme better. But
someone has been thinking way too much about Melissa Joan Hart this week.
Yeah, it wasn't intentional to have two direct references, but there you go. I think every episode should have a cameo from a different existing MCU character, because that would be really funny. I just want to see that character meeting literally every other existing character in the MCU to see how they'd get on.
I like how you've taken it over to the small screen. Just to try and eke out as much from this format as you can.
Yes. Well, it could be a movie, but it would be weird to do a parody of Clarissa Explains It All as a big screen movie.
That's true.
Adventure.
Some would say, Seb, it would be strange to do a parody of Clarissa Explains It All, full stop.
If they say that, I don't want to know them.
Okay. So I'll give you my pitch now. Seb, we're starting at a similar place, but we're moving on in very different directions. My pitch features Shuri heavily, and it starts in that Oakland Outreach Centre that we see at the end of Black Panther. But mine would be a movie, and it would be called Iron Man 4. So here's what happens. Shuri, in this outreach centre, discovers a really bright girl called Riri Williams and kind of takes her under her wing, mentors her. And because Tony Stark is dead in the MCU at this point, the world needs a new Iron Man. They build this awesome new Iron Man tech. Shuri essentially becomes the voice in the suit, can kind of like step into it virtually and help her pilot it sometimes. But otherwise, it's Riri in the suit being the new Iron Man. That's a good pitch, right?
It is. I just wonder why you've... what you've done is... you've taken a character from Black Panther and you've decided to lessen their role in the spin-off by introducing another character.
No, they're co-leads.
Didn't sound like it.
They're
sounded
co-leads.
Like it was more Riri's show, to be honest. So well, like you just wanted to sneak in that Iron Man, that new Iron Man movie. It's just you're just going back to the old ways. You're just like Marvel with their resets. You're just going back to the old characters.
I think you use in whatever way you can the Black Panther characters to relaunch every single corner of the MCU.
So why don't you just put Shuri in an Iron Man costume then?
M'Baku is the new Captain Wakanda, and that replaces Captain America. I've got loads of these.
Now, if you'd said that, I'd have gone with you. But
okay, so we'll have to wait to see who James picks on the start of the next episode. So that is it for this week. Don't forget that the next episode of the show will be on Superman 3.
Oh, I'm very excited. I have some hot takes about Superman 3.
Seb, did you see, you might not have seen this, James and I filled out the next couple of weeks on the dock for what we're going to cover on the next few episodes.
Yes, I did see that. I was like, oh, who's been filling out the document and getting date formats slightly wrong? But yes.
Well, we decided, so Superman 3 was your pick. One of the next, I think the week after that is James's pick, then it's my pick, and then we get to Avengers Infinity War.
James has picked. Oh, is it? Hang on. Is this bit for to go on the podcast?
It's to go on the podcast, so it's still a secret.
I won't say what. I saw James's pick, and I was like, "Oh God, what have I done to deserve this?"
And my pick might be worse. It's gonna be it's gonna be a very fun couple of months on Cinematic Universe. I'm looking forward to getting to all those films. But yeah, Superman 3 next week. Seb is lining up the hot takes as we speak. If you're enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on, I'll say it again, iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. We've got some bonus episodes coming to Patreon soon. So I was supposed to have recorded one on Friday, but
my co-presenter on that one, his internet was not working on Friday. So expect that maybe in a week or two.
Yeah, James is working on one. I'm working on one. It's going to be fantastic. So if you want to hear those, back us on Patreon. And if you do that, we'll probably hit even more goals and produce even more content for you. So that's very exciting. We're going to have to do another commentary again soon as well, aren't we, Seb?
Yeah. What's it going to be on?
I don't know. Maybe Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe we can go back and do the Avengers again, but actually record it properly this time. It's been long enough that maybe we can manage it.
I think we need to get together to watch Infinity War, and I think maybe the night before we should watch Avengers again and do commentary again.
Or we'll do an Age of Ultron live commentary.
Nobody wants that, and I say that as someone who likes Age of Ultron, but nobody wants that.
Amon wants that.
Yeah. Amon can join us.
Yeah. Okay, so you can find more episodes of the show at cinematicuniverse.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter, @cine_verse, or send us an email to editorial@cinematicuniverse.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.